Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's story is a listener suggestion. Thank you to B for bringing Destiny's story to my attention. This is one I actually hadn't heard of before, even though it seemed to be quite a high-profile one in the US at the time. Destiny's sweet little face and her story immediately grabbed at my heart and my anxieties. July 2006, Salt Lake City, Utah. Destiny's parents were simply allowing their child to be a child, letting her run free and play in the safety of her own backyard, only for Evil to be watching. Evil that had meticulously kept notes of his sick plans for this five-year-old girl, this afternoon in particular being his opportunity to strike, stealing the life of a happy and carefree child before it even had the chance to really begin. This is Destiny's story. Destiny Ann Norton was born November 30th, 2000, in Holiday, Utah, to parents Ricky and Rachel Norton. Destiny was the first child born to the couple, who would later go on to welcome another little girl, Trinity, in July of 2004. In July 2006, Rachel would be heavily pregnant with their third daughter, who Destiny had already named Fate Leanne. Destiny would be described as a vibrant and happy girl, always smiling. Destiny was full of spunk and attitude. She was not afraid to speak up for herself and make sure her opinions were heard. The young family, only months before, moved into a ranch-style duplex in a residential neighbourhood of Salt Lake City, on the corner of the 700 block of South Street and the 500 block of East Street. Not only did the family live in this home, but as many as 10 other family and friends lived with them at any given time. At the time this story takes place, three adult couples, including the Nortons, lived in the home, and their combined four children. So that's 10 people in total. The reasoning given for this was simply the cost of living. They all lived together, and they chipped in with the finances and helped with the household chores and each other's children. It made life easier. Now, Ricky and Rachel had a rough start to their lives. Rachel was abused as a child and grew up in and out of group homes and with different foster families, never really feeling the sense of belonging. That was until at 16 years old she met Ricky Norton at a party and the two quickly became inseparable. Ricky also had a tough childhood and he dropped out of high school early. He committed some petty crimes. But the two were dedicated to each other and they worked hard, and they were determined to give their children everything they didn't have, a happy childhood, a loving and nurturing family environment, which may be another reason for living in a house full of people. It was the family Rachel and Ricky never had. And by all accounts, they were doing an amazing job at parenting. Destiny and Trinity were happy and healthy and well-loved and taken care of. July 16th, 2006 was just your normal day for the Norton family. That evening, five-year-old Destiny had a bath and asked her dad, Ricky, if she could go outside and play in the backyard while he was cleaning up from dinner. This was only going to be a few minutes. And although the backyard was a shared backyard with several other neighbours, the yard was secure and the gate had a lock on it, so it should have been safe. Destiny took this opportunity running and she raced outside barefoot, wearing her mother's grey and black striped t-shirt and carrying a pillow. This would be the last time Destiny would be seen by her family alive. 10 minutes later, at around 8:30 p.m, Ricky went outside to fetch his daughter for bed, but there was no one in the backyard. Destiny was nowhere to be seen. This was extremely alarming because there was no way for the kindergartner to escape from the yard. and even if she could, she wouldn't. Destiny was quite mature for her age. Her mother, Rachel, made sure her daughter understood stranger danger and how to keep herself safe. Rachel would later lovingly recall Destiny would dig her heels in and refuse to budge from the curb unless there was an adult there to hold her hand. She knew the importance of not wandering off on her own because, unfortunately, there were people out there in the world with bad intentions. If only Rachel knew just how true this would be when teaching her eldest daughter these lessons. Destiny's family and the other members of the household began searching for the little girl immediately. Another benefit of living with a lot of people, there are many eyes out there looking for Destiny. But there was no sign of her anywhere. And at 8:41 p.m, Rachel and Ricky reported their daughter missing to local police. Police started a search of the neighbourhood and surrounding neighbourhoods with the assistance of about 150 volunteers. Missing persons posters were quickly made up with a description of Destiny Norton. Her smiling photo displayed showing Destiny's green eyes and blonde hair with a green streak. Her smile showing multiple silver-capped teeth in the bottom row. Missionaries with the Church of Latter-day Saints went door-to-door handing these posters out, asking everyone to keep looking for the missing girl. Now, I did see some talk in online forums about Destiny's teeth and some judgment about Ricky and Rachel's parenting. Because she did have the caps and a green streak in her hair and all the people living with the family, you know how these forums go when a child is missing and things don't fit the cookie-cutter picture we all expect. And sometimes that judgment is warranted. But the Nortons adored their children and provided for them the best they could. Destiny had what is known as bottle rot, and this is usually caused by giving a child a bottle to go to sleep with, having the milk on the teeth for a long period of time, and the acid-like film from the milk breaks down the enamel on the teeth. But giving a young child a bottle to sleep with, an innocent error for rookie parents. If anything, they were being very proactive and caring by taking Destiny to the dentist and getting the caps on because even though these are baby teeth, these teeth do have an impact on later adult teeth. That's good parenting in my opinion. The search for Destiny continued on for 8 long days. The FBI quickly became involved and an Amber Alert was issued. The FBI seemed most interested in a 5-square block area around the Norton family home. Especially since the girl was so young and not known to wander off on her own. They believed she was most likely still very close by. July 22, 2006, police received two tips of interest. The first tip was that a girl matching Destiny's description, right down to the silver-capped bottom teeth and the green streak in her hair. But this witness spotted a little girl in a black pickup truck with a man, in a Smith's convenience store parking lot in Farmington, not far from the Norton family home. Now, this tip would turn out not to be connected to Destiny, but it was that second tip that caught police's attention. It was someone that had been on their radar from the start, and now he was firmly on top of their suspect list, and that someone was a neighbour of the Nortons, 20-year-old Craig Roger Gregerson. Gregerson would later be described by other neighbours as a quiet man who kept to himself, a family man with a wife and toddler. What neighbours didn't know was the couple had been separated for 2 months, with his estranged wife Catherine and daughter staying at his mother's close by. The 2-year relationship was a toxic one. According to Catherine Gregerson's family, Gregerson had been an abusive husband. He'd been known to kick and punch his wife, at one point causing Catherine to miscarry. This abuse would sometimes occur in front of Catherine's extended family. On one occasion, when Catherine's mother attempted to step in and protect her daughter, Gregerson choked her, punching her repeatedly. Gregerson allegedly stating about his wife, quote, "He didn't care if he killed her, that it would be better to be in jail than living with her," unquote. There had also been a violent incident involving Gregerson's and Catherine's 1-year-old daughter about 6 months before the separation. During a fight between the couple, Gregerson picked up the little girl and threw her across the room. Catherine would later admit she was scared of her husband, but was unable to leave him at the time because she loved him. July 24, 2006. Because of the second tip they received the day before, investigators brought in Gregerson for questioning. This meeting was completely voluntary and he was to sit a polygraph. Now, police had already spoken to Gregerson in his home the days after Destiny went missing. This was when the police went door to door asking neighbours if they could search their homes, in the situation where Destiny did wander off and then got lost and scared and went into a neighbouring home to hide. Police went inside Gregerson's home with search dogs and he was questioned by police, but nothing of interest was found at the time and he wasn't considered a suspect. Now, while they did go inside with search dogs, Gregerson wouldn't allow them to do a full search of the entire home. They kind of just walked around the upper level. And while that was strange to police at the time, they didn't have probable cause to do anything more. As I said, Gregerson went into the station to speak with the FBI investigators and to sit for a voluntary polygraph. Except the polygraph would never happen, because Gregerson would confess to the abduction and murder of 5-year-old Destiny Norton. Gregerson told the polygraph examiner he'd been planning on taking Destiny for a while, that he had written plans for the crime. He admitted he felt sexually attracted to Destiny and he fantasised about abducting her and engaging in sexual activity with her in his basement. And not just Destiny, but he wrote about several other little girls who lived in the neighbourhood. On the evening of Destiny's disappearance, Gregerson heard his dogs barking outside, and when he looked out the window to see what was wrong, he saw Destiny playing in the yard he shared with the Nortons. Gregerson went out his door approaching Destiny, who obviously recognised him, and somehow he lured her towards his home. As he attempted to grab her to take her inside, Destiny became scared. The little girl started to scream that she wanted to go home. In a panic, Gregerson put his hand over her mouth and began to squeeze to silence her. He squeezed until Destiny went limp. He took her unconscious body inside his home and laid her on the floor. Destiny was no longer breathing and she was unresponsive. Gregerson then completed his sick plan and sexually assaulted Destiny's remains, only stopping because he heard his telephone ring. On the phone was Gregerson's mother, asking him where he was because he was late to pick up his daughter from his estranged wife, Catherine. After that call, Gregerson took Destiny's body down to the basement, storing her remains in a plastic container. He then left. He went to his mother's home and attempted to reconcile with Catherine. And this seemed to have worked because Gregerson would spend the night there. 8:30 p.m., July 24, 2006. 8 days to almost the minute from when Destiny was last seen. Police made a horrific discovery. Less than 100 feet from the Norton family home, found in the crawl space of a basement in a plastic tub, just as Gregerson said, was the deceased remains of 5-year-old Destiny Norton. Hanging on the wall upstairs was a white Tyvek suit, a plastic disposable coverall and receipt for cleaning products. It seemed that Gregerson attempted to cover his tracks and mask the smell of Destiny's decomposing remains with the cleaning products. Outside of this, 27 other items were seized from Gregerson's home. Clothing, bedding, couch cushions, VHS cassettes, letters. A black Bible apparently bearing Gregerson's name. 2 cameras. Destiny's pillow found in the dumpster outside the apartment complex. Also found inside a 50-pound bag of dog food in Gregerson's garage was the T-shirt Destiny was wearing at the time of her disappearance. Dr. Todd Gray, the state medical examiner, performed the autopsy the following day. The results of Destiny's autopsy have never been released, except that the injuries on her body were consistent with post-mortem sexual assault. And what this means is Gregerson did rape the little girl after she died, just as he said. To this day, we do not know Destiny's cause of death or what she went through in her final moments. However, based on Gregerson's confession, I think it is fair to assume cause of death was most likely due to suffocation. Shortly after this, the local police held a press conference to confirm Destiny was found as well as Gregerson's arrest. The media was very critical of the investigation, in particular why it took the police so long to find Destiny in Gregerson's basement. And why didn't they find her in the house the week prior when they first searched? In defence of this, the police chief stated that their, quote, had been conflicting information from various sources right up until the last minute, unquote. However, the police would respond to public and media pressure later, leading to an official apology to the Nortons and their friends. Gregerson was charged with kidnapping and aggravated murder on July 27, 2006. He waived his right to a speedy trial. He also waived his right to a preliminary hearing. If found guilty, Gregerson was facing a possible death penalty sentence. And what we see quite often in any case involving the death penalty, a plea bargain was negotiated and accepted on December 4, 2006. Craig Roger Gregerson pleaded guilty to capital murder and child kidnapping. He was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for the murder charge, and 15 years to life on the kidnapping charge, terms that will be served concurrently. In court, Destiny's grandmother gave a victim impact statement, calling Gregerson a monster. Quote, I now know what hate is, and my hate for you is unmatched. Unquote. Prosecutor Robin Stott said Gregerson will live in isolation in a high-security cell except for time to shower. Quote, the inmate will have to be protected from others who could seek retribution for the killing of a defenseless girl. Unquote. July 26, 2006. Destiny Norton was laid to rest at the Halliday Memorial Park. A large crowd grieved for her. Across the road from the family's home, a large maple tree was planted in the five-year-old's memory. Its base surrounded with flowers, cards, stuffed animals and candles, allowing community members and Destiny's loved ones a space to mourn the death of this sweet little girl. Quote, she was just so happy she was an angel. Unquote. Despite their initial thoughts of the investigation and the authorities, the Nortons were grateful that their daughter was found so they could lay her to rest. Quote, with everything I've said about the police department and law enforcement agencies, there is a bottom line to this, and the community needs to know this. They are the ones who brought Destiny home. Unquote. From his prison cell, Gregerson sent the Nortons a letter to apologise for his crimes, writing, quote, Dear Norton family, you have every right to hate me. Every right to want me dead. Every right to never forgive me. I take full responsibility for your daughter's death, but her death was not the worst part. What I did after her death was inexcusably sick and disgusting. I hate myself for what I did. I am in terrible pain every day because your daughter is dead by my actions. She should still be with you. All I can say is I'm sorry. The words are small, but they are very sincere. Unquote. Personally, I don't think I would want this. No, I know I wouldn't want this. Putting myself in Destiny's parents' shoes, nothing Gregerson could have said would help. I would feel he was only doing this selfishly for his guilt, possibly. And honestly, I would want that guilt to slowly eat away at him every day. He does not deserve that weight to be lifted from him one bit. I would want that mental image of him locked in a dark, damp cell, isolated with his thoughts, and living with what he did haunted for the rest of his life. Catherine Gregerson initially stood by her husband. During an interview with KSL reporters, she claimed Gregerson had been set up by the authorities. Quote, I think they are setting him up. Unless I hear it from my husband's mouth that he did it, that's what I think. And I have yet to talk to my husband. Unquote. However, after his guilty plea and conviction, she was resigned to the truth. Catherine has since divorced Gregerson and was raising their daughter alone. In 2007, Ricky and Rachel Norton created the Destiny Search Project to assist with missing persons cases. The aim was to provide services to families and law enforcement agencies. Services such as social media management, family support services, organising volunteers for searches, as well as support for law enforcement. The Destiny Search Project made its mark on the world, just like Destiny Norton. Their mission statement reading, "You are never so lost that angels can't find you." In 2008, it was made into a non-profit organisation, regularly working alongside the National Centre for Missing and Exploited Children. They were instrumental in the searches for Camille Cleverly, a missing college student who went missing while hiking in September of 2008. She would be unfortunately later found at the base of a cliff, deceased having had a tragic accident. And Hirsa Nirmu, a 7-year-old girl who went missing from her neighbourhood in March of 2008. Unfortunately, Hirsa's fate was all too familiar for the Nortons. Hirsa was abducted, raped and murdered by a neighbour. This case is so horrific, and in my research here, I only scratched the surface. If you would like to hear Hirsa's story, please let me know on Facebook or Instagram. This story is one I have never heard of. It never got the publicity it deserved. Little Hirsa should not be forgotten. Ricky and Rachel also offered their resources to assist with the search for Susan Powell in December of 2009, a missing persons case that grabbed everyone's attention and hearts. Unfortunately, to date, the whereabouts of Susan's remains have never been found, and given her estranged husband Josh chose to cowardly take not only his life, but that of their innocent sons in the months following Susan's disappearance, we may never know what happened to this beautiful young mother. Due to funding and exhaustion, Ricky and Rachel Norton chose to step down from the Destiny Search Project in 2019. And without them, it seemed inappropriate to continue without the charity's founders at the helm. The Destiny Search Project closing their doors later that same year. However, in the 11 years of its existence, the difference they would have made to so many families and communities, reuniting loved ones and providing closure for others. It gave Destiny the opportunity to provide a legacy that she never got the chance to in her short life. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, searchlives_stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.